I've heard that with a graduate degree in astrophysics and a box of venomous snakes, anyone can rank a keyword in Google.
Well, I don't know about the degree in astrophysics. I certainly don't have one of those and could not obtain one of those. As far as venomous snakes, those would be the fake SEOs that try to sell you 412 SEO directory listings for $99. You pretty much want to stay away from them.
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Weekly tips for building and marketing your profitable business online. From copyblogger.com.
Hey everyone, this is Robert Bruce. Welcome to another episode of Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. I am here again with the founder and CEO of Copyblogger Media, Brian Clark. Brian, how was South by Southwest?
It was a good time. It was busy. Met a lot of people, saw a lot of old friends, got the whole company together for the first time, had a big old bash of a party that I had a great time at and had a great time putting on. So I think it was a success.
Okay, so today's topic is interesting. There is just so much confusion around SEO, search engine optimization. Everybody has differing ideas and practices and best practices all over the place. You can hear any opinion you want. So what is it really? What is search engine optimization really at a fundamental level?
Well, let me first say that, you know, as far as best practices, there's not a lot of disagreement, actually, among people who know what they're talking about. You know, the top SEOs out there pretty much all agree on the fundamentals. Now, when you get into various heavy detail and really drill down into observation and research as far as observing what happens in Google, that's where, you know, there's a lot of extrapolation, and sometimes people are trying to make a name for themselves. And then, of course, at the other end, you have the SEO naysayers who think it's completely unnecessary, which is not really a sound way to go about things. But to answer your question, at a fundamental level, SEO is simply optimizing website content so that it is friendlier to a search engine in the sense that the search engine finds that piece of content more relevant than other pieces of content for a specific search term.
What does that mean in simple terms? Break it down for us. What does basic white hat SEO involve?
Right. Okay. So people use search engines. You know, you're always writing for people. The old argument of whether or not you write for search engines or people is ridiculous. Now, search engines aren't perfect, and you have things like content farms that have really kind of cruddy content that rank well based on various, strengths of huge websites and highly funded companies like Demand Media. If you've been paying attention to the search world in the last month, a lot of those people doing that type of content got slapped.
Yeah.
You know, some disappeared out of the index completely. Some people just took a nosedive in the rankings. You know, our philosophy all along was it's got to be not only good content, it's got to be excellent content. And Google will continue to evolve to meet with that ideal. It's their ideal as much as it is ours at Copyblogger. So,
yeah, real quick, if you don't mind, give an example of what some of these sites may have been doing. Why was it considered bad in Google's eyes? And why were they kind of removed, some of them entirely, like you said, from the index?
Well, a lot of cases like Demand Media, they were simply creating content to fill a void for search terms that really didn't have any content. So the content wasn't great, but it was all there was anyway. So as far as relevance goes, that's pretty much the best that was out there. Okay, so unless someone wants to come in and create something better than what Demand Media is doing, in those long tail searches, Google will probably allow them to stay there. Now, there's a big difference when you have a high volume search term and you've got some keyword stuff piece of crap that shows up in the top results. Google's pretty much done their best so far to eliminate that, both by algorithm and the great unspoken secret of hand editing the search results. They do have human beings. Matt Cutts' team, the anti-spam team, that's their job. Hmm. So Google doesn't like to admit it, but they've as much done so by singling out certain companies and sparing others.
And then, okay, so then back to before I interrupted you, what does a good basic white hat SEO strategy look like? As opposed to this kind of content farm, irrelevant, just trying to slam out as much, in some cases, literally just a collection of words that are focused around keywords. What does the other side look like then? What does white hat SEO look like?
Okay, so again, getting back to the fact that people use search engines, and Google is trying to match up the words people use to search with content, right? So this is fundamentally a people thing and a language thing. So your automatic starting point always is language. In the search engine world, they're called keywords, right? Keyword phrases. So that's literally the language people choose to use voluntarily. No robot is forcing them to use these words. This is the language of the audience, as I like to kind of paraphrase a famous Gene Schwartz quote from back in the 60s. And that's another point here. Forget search engines. The language the people use, that is the language of the audience. And as a content creator, whether you want search traffic or not, you have to use the language that the audience uses, or there's a disconnect. This has been true well before search engines exist. So now that search engines can send you targeted traffic, why not take it? So anyone who says that starting off with keywords is wrong is kind of taking a I know better than the people attitude, which is you're not gonna last long. Okay, so you start with language. Number two, of course, you got to get content. Now it's important, as I mentioned, that the content be high quality and relevant to the people you're trying to speak to. But then there's this extra element where you have to spoon feed certain elements to Google so they know that this piece of content matches that language that people are using. So you do have to make adjustments to your content, even though you're still writing it to please people. Never forget that. Again, no one but people use the search engines. And then finally, it's getting more complex, but in a general sense, you've got to get links to your content. Now, these type of links are evolving as social media expands and Google adapts to a new framework. So I'm starting to like to use the word indication of quality, which is how Google started. They used the link as a vote that this piece of content is worth someone's attention because someone took the time to reference it, citation, right? That was Google's original PageRank concept. And again, over a decade, things have evolved. But it still fundamentally, even with social media, involves links because, yes, Google has admitted they are now taking into account tweets and retweets of content, you know, but how does that happen? By links, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we share content on Twitter. It is links. Same thing with Facebook likes. That technically isn't a link per se, but when content is published around Facebook, there may be some indications there. Now, Google has a harder time using Facebook because it's behind a wall, right? And Facebook likes that because they are creating their own little micro internet inside, kind of like AOL did at the beginning. Then again, we know what happened to AOL. So, but the point is that Google is looking for votes from people that say, this is good. This is worth sharing, worth linking to, worth talking about. Okay. So those are really the three things: keywords, content, links.
Yeah. You've broken this down pretty simply: keywords, content, links. Let's get into each one of these individually now. You hear a lot, people bash keywords all the time. They call it unnatural, and it's what makes search optimized content really bad, you know, when you're stuffing it with keywords. But you seem to be coming at this from a different angle. What are you saying when you talk about the use of keywords and thoughtfully, even from the beginning, using keywords?
Right. So David Armano, who is a very smart guy who works at Edelman, wrote a post a few weeks back, you know, positing that maybe we'd move beyond keywords as the basis of search based on social. And I didn't comment because I didn't have time, but I don't understand what the thinking is here because, again, how do you have search without the language the people are using to search? Okay, so really what he's talking about is Google is looking at different indicators, and we've discussed this in the form of content sharing and social media. But that doesn't change the fact that Google's not smart enough yet to know what a piece of content is about unless it's using the same language that people are searching for. So until we have a true semantic web and Google understands synonyms and the English language in a way that most Americans don't understand it, you know, you know, the subtlety in the context, we're a long way off from that. Now, again, Google's working very hard, but even 10 years out or so, where, you know, 11 years out, Google's still kind of primitive, and that's why people can game it. But I'm just going to reiterate that if you view the language that people are using to search as somehow bad or beneath you, then again, you're not going to succeed as a marketer because you're not in harmony with one of the fundamentals, which is having that congruence and that bond with the people you're trying to talk to.
Okay, so that's number one, keywords. Let's get on to number two, which is content. And what about that? What does optimized content mean?
Okay, so this gets back to part of optimized content these days because of the third thing, which is links or indications of quality from third parties, you know, from outside the author themselves, is the quality of the content itself. So these days, the modern practice of SEO and where the whole term link bait came from is really compelling content that tends to get linked to, shared, et cetera. So, you know, part of it is you hear about how you should use your keywords in a certain way in your title. That's optimizing for a search engine. But often that won't be the most compelling headline for your audience, your direct, the people who read you by email, the people who are going to share your content on Twitter, right? So you write a headline that is aimed at being just compelling from a pure copywriting standpoint, right? That will most likely end up being more shared, more commented on, more liked, and more linked to. So that's part of optimization. All the stuff we teach on Copyblogger about creating compelling content. But on the other side of it, as I mentioned, is if you use a great metaphor in your headline that we all know means is a synonym or is a reference to something else, then, you know, for example, when I write the Depeche Mode guide to great online content, you know, Google probably thinks it's about Depeche Mode, and I'm not going to have a chance to rank for Depeche Mode. But it's really not about that. So Google, again, is like a very smart, precocious toddler. You know, and I'm not being critical.
No, I'm just saying
it's a very difficult thing, what Google is trying to do with their algorithm, and they have very, very smart engineers, but it's just very difficult. I mean, think about it, Robert. What we're talking about here is a form of artificial intelligence, if they ever get that good. So don't bash Google for not doing a good enough job. They're doing really good considering how tough a problem this is. But anyway, so in addition to making content that's compelling for people, you have to spoon feed the toddler a little bit. So, you know, if you don't want to go with your keywords at the front of your title, which is one of the things that makes it easy for Google, then, you know, now we've got, for example, the WordPress frameworks that are out there, like our own Genesis. You can show one headline on the page to people and show another title tag to Google in the code, because that's what Google looks at. So you get the best of both worlds. You're actually able to write directly for people and then tweak your headline a little bit so Google knows what you're talking about, and then you're able to rank well, assuming you get, you know, all the links and stuff that we'll talk about next. So there's obviously a bunch of, there's like 15 things you got to pay attention to when it comes to on-page optimization which for a long time people thought didn't matter as much. In the last year and a half, we're finding out that on-page elements are still as critical as ever. So you got to spoon feed the toddler.
That's perfect. I love that analogy. All right, let's get on to number three, which is links. How do we get them?
Well, that's the thing. Again, it goes back to the quality and the nature of the content. You know, one thing, I recently spoke at PubCon Austin, and I threw out a way to come up with interesting and engaging content that also results in great headlines. And it's basically when you have an element of relevancy or meaning to the audience, what they're there to learn from you, right? And then you have something that's fascinating, some engagement element, okay? And then you put those two together and you've got a great idea for an article or a post that naturally allows you to write a great headline, which of course is simply a promise of what they're going to get in the content. So it's really about the content that allows you to make a great headline. So that headline I referenced earlier, I think I didn't Depeche quite Mode. Get it right, but it was five things Depeche Mode can teach you about, you know, online marketing, right? So online marketing is the relevance. It's the meaning. It's why people read Copyblogger. And Depeche Mode was the fascination. So we actually did a headline seminar with Jeff Sexton, and this is how he broke down a whole bunch of Copyblogger headlines from the past. You know, things that I had kind of written based on almost intuitively at this point because I've been doing it for so long. But yeah, he really nailed it. And so when you write stuff like that with those fascinating elements, people want to share it. You know, sharing content online has become a sign of status, you know, because people like great content and they like to share great content because it shows them as a curator or a source, an editorial source, right? That's what we've all become to a certain degree.
Yeah.
So if you write that kind of content, people will link to it. They will retweet it. They will like it. They will comment, you know, all the stuff you need to give Google the indications that say, hey, this isn't run-of-the-mill piece of eHow content. This is something that people are talking about and sharing, and that's what you're looking for.
Isn't part of this idea of links and taking action on getting links, doesn't that also somehow circle back to people and relationships?
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm so glad you asked that because I'd be in danger of, you know, leaving things at a point that a lot of the anti-SEO people say, which is just create great content. That's it. Hmm. No, you need to know the right language. You need to use that language. And getting links and sharing, you know, I mean, a guy like Robert Scoble's been online forever. Even I don't have to work behind the scenes anymore on content promotion, right?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. The early days, you did a lot of that.
It was all, you know, two posts a week and tons of reaching out, establishing relationships with other bloggers. At that time, it was all blogging, right? This was pre-Twitter. Facebook was just getting started. So it really was about getting links from other blogs, doing well on Dig, which required people to vote for your post, right? So we've talked about before, you know, there was a whole bunch of people that were friends, and if they thought your content was good, they would vote for it. If they thought it was crap, they would not, because it's about status and reputation when it comes to content promotion, right? But yeah, it was all about human relationships. And, you know, you need a way to find the right people, of course. So, you know, during those first 2 years, not only was I was writing the two best posts I could a week, but I was finding other relevant sources. I was watching Dig and noticing who the power users were. I was networking, you know, behind the scenes. It, you know, it took time, but now we do six posts a week and I don't do any of that. Although I still I have more friends than ever and more business associates and more of a larger network, but that's just what you do now. It doesn't feel like a job.
Yeah. Give me one example of how you reached out to somebody, you know, when nobody knew who you were or cared anything about what you were doing?
So my real first big link came from Darren Rouse, and I just emailed him, and I'd written a post about headlines, and he liked it, and he linked to it. That was easy, because Darren is the nicest guy you'll ever meet. When I released the viral copy report, you know, which was very meta because the topic was about getting links.
Yep.
I reached out to people like Steve Rubell and Robert Scoble and Chris Perillo, all these old guard people, and all of them linked to it. You know, Rubell griped me out, said I was a scourge of the planet, but I didn't care. You know, I mean, I don't think I was being controversial on purpose. I just rubbed him the wrong way somehow. So yeah, it can be scary because these are like the so-called celebrities of the blogging world at the time.
Yep.
But you know, you just got to step up, and if you've got something of value, you know, you got to share it. Now, people aren't as link happy as they used to be during the golden years of blogging. But now again, it's really shifted to Twitter and Facebook. So you should be working up your social network all the time. Be helpful. Talk to people. Don't lead off the bat asking them for something. And it's actually much easier than the cold email, because it was scary. It was scary for me to reach out to those people, but it's not anymore, certainly. And, you know, it's just an evolving space. So what I did 5 years ago is not going to work exactly the same this year. But what you do see is us spending time on Twitter, now spending time on Facebook, just expanding a network that tends to take things upon itself and just goes. If they see you've done something good, then they're going to spread it for you.
All right. So that's the three elements of really good white hat SEO and keywords, content, and links. Before we put this one in the can, I want to ask you about website code. You hear people talking about website code as part of all of this, as part of search engine optimization. What's the significance of code?
Well, that's another good thing, because if you have clean code, it's really an aspect of helping spoon feed Google. Because if you have jumbled bad HTML or screwed up CSS and all these kind of things, Google spiders, you know, that's how they index content. And if they run into a roadblock, then they can't do it. So you've got all this great content and you've got all this and that, you know, so website code alone without the right keywords and great content and links isn't going to get you there. But bad website code can completely put at risk all your hard work. So, you know, in the WordPress space, when it first started out, there was nothing but free themes and anyone could contribute them. And a lot of them were basically pretty pictures that sacrificed the underlying integrity of the code. So now you've seen the emergence of WordPress theme frameworks. There's many of them out there. We have our own Genesis framework, which has kind of taken the WordPress recommended route of completely separating the underlying code, which Google looks at, that's the framework, from the design, which is why we have Genesis as a framework and then child themes as the pretty pictures.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Never the twain shall meet. Upgrades are easy. You never have to touch the code. If you change that underlying framework, your design is never borked. It's really, really great stuff. Okay. Yep. Let's wrap this one up. I want to remind everybody, if you want more of this and you're not already, if you go to the bottom of this post that this radio show is in, or to the sidebar on copyblogger.com, you can sign up for the Internet Marketing for Smart People email course. It's a 20-part free course. Jump on that email list. We will not spam you. There's some really great information in there along the lines of everything we talk about all week, every week here on the radio show. Brian, anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Well, yeah, it's interesting timing because I just saw the finished version of this new video, an introductory video for our Scribe SEO service. And Scribe, of course, wouldn't be a good product worthy of Copyblogger Media if it didn't cover the three things of, you know, keywords, content and links. So go take a look at that new video because it's like 1 minute long and it explains in a nutshell how Scribe does all this stuff. So we'll link to that in the show notes and just take a look. I'm just thrilled because it's the coolest video I've ever seen. The guys who did it, I mean, it's just such a really good production, and so I'm kind of jazzed about that. So check it out and see if you dig the video, and then also check out Scribe, of course.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll put that link in the post here, and that's at scribeseo.com. You can check out that video. Everybody, thanks for listening, as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Internet Marketing for Smart People Radio. Weekly tips for building and marketing your profitable business online. From copyblogger.com.